And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Melody.
Yes.
Happy hump day.
Well, yay. Boy, I'll tell you, it's hard to keep track of the days when Monday was a holiday. And, you know, it's like, okay, is it Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday? But I'm glad you're here to remind me, Dave. I really am. And Gold had a nice reminder today, what it is, why it does what it does, and why everyone needs to have it in their portfolio. Gold today started out low, 1693. Had a nice turnaround, up 380, and the New York spot price at 1715. Silver had the same kind of a day, down to 1680, had a nice pop, 1740 for the day. Platinum was up $9 at 833. Palladium was up 8 at 2034. The USDX today, I don't show anything exciting there, 98.98. I guess that's been all over the page. You have crude oil down 143 at 32.92. And I know the markets, the paper markets, were strong today. The Dow was up another 553 points at 25,548. The NASDAQ was up 72, 9,412. The S&P was up 44 at 3,036. You have the 10-year yield, 0.68, and it hasn't barely moves. It was green for Japan, London, and Germany, and a little red for Hong Kong. And, hey, the world is fine again. Just cracks me up. Anyway, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. And we have Wendy Wilson joining us this Wednesday afternoon, as she always does. Good afternoon,
Good
Wendy.
Afternoon, Melody. Hello, Dave.
Hey there.
Hey, we're going to talk about pets. Everybody loves animals. We're
going to
talk
do.
About, yeah, yeah. We're going to talk about protecting our pets from venomous bites because we're coming into, you know, the spring when you see little critters going around. And, you know, pets are naturally curious. So pets are curious and get themselves into a lot of trouble when they investigate, even if it's a little bee floating around on a clover, or even a scorpion, or spiders, and even, of course, snakes. So if your pet has ever engaged in a venom-biting standoff, you know that the outcome is not all that great for the pet. So vet bills for venomous bites can be in the thousands of dollars to treat. Anti-venom vaccines are expensive, and often pet owners don't know what bit their pet, and therefore those vaccines cannot be used. So you got to know what bit your pet. So what would be the solution? Well, we're going to take a look at some interesting new information on how our pets do when they get poisoned by venomous bites. There was this new study, May 2020, at the University of Queensland in Australia, where venomous bites frequently occur, and they found, you know, with regard to cats and dogs being bitten by these types of venomous creatures, that they handle the poison differently. So according to the research, cats are more likely to survive venomous bites than dogs, compared to the dogs. So the researchers wanted to know why that was. Here's a quote from Brian Fry, professor, University of Queensland. He says, snake bite is a common occurrence for pets, cats and dogs, all across the globe, and can be fatal. The fatal condition is called venom-induced consumptive coagulotherapy. So what this means is your pet loses its ability to clot blood and it bleeds to death. Not good. He goes on to say, in Australia, the eastern brown snake is responsible for 76% of the reported domestic pet snake bites each year. Well, that's in Australia. I don't know where you're at there, Melanie, but here in North Carolina, we have rattlesnakes and we have copperhead snakes. I'm not sure what you have in your region, though.
We have snakes.
We just have snakes. They slither.
She is big bullfrogs.
Huge well, bullfrogs. They well, eat snakes, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, snakes eat the frogs, I believe. But anyway, cat power. Let's look at the cats, because the statistical data shows that the difference between when cats are bitten than compared to dogs, when they're bitten by poisonous snakes, cats are twice as likely to survive by 66%. Dogs have a 31% survival rate. So the data also shows that cats have this higher survival rate if given anti-venom serum treatments. So the researchers actually tested snake venom from 11 different poisonous snakes, and they looked at the blood plasma of each of these types of pets. What they discovered is that the snake venom works much faster in the blood plasma of a dog compared to a cat, or even in humans. So this is suggesting that dogs will suffer from blood clot failure sooner and are vulnerable to these types of venomous bites. The research did get published in the Journal of Comparative Biochemistry and Physiology, Toxicology, and Pharmacology, May 2020. Well, let's look at the snake bite when the pet gets bit. We should really go over how the pets react to the venom compared to how humans react to it. So in humans, if we get bit, the venom in the blood is the problem for us rather than the bite site itself. For the pets, it seems to be the opposite. So the bite site becomes infected, and then blood poisoning can result. And since the clotting factor is altered in dogs by this venom, they can bleed out. So the snake bite on a dog's paw, for instance, can cause massive necrosis of the skin layer, where the skin dies, turns black, and then falls off, leaving a bloody paw. Vets have really no solutions other than to give the dog pain reliever and antibiotics to try to save the paw. Pet owners are told that surgery and skin grafts will most likely be required afterward. Here is another quote from Dr. Fry, Professor Fry. He says, "Without venom, the spontaneous clotting time of the dog's blood is dramatically faster than in cats, and this would make dogs more vulnerable regarding snake venom. This is consistent with clinical data showing more rapid onset of symptoms and lethal effects in dogs compared to cats." So let's look at the most common bite. Dogs are not only curious, they're also protective of their owners. Some snakes really don't give any warning like rattlesnakes do. So especially in tall grass where a dog may meander in, and his owner may be just on the edge of the grass, and you may not even see the snake until you're right upon it, and then the snake's in bite striking distance. Now, dogs will instinctively move in to protect an owner, and therefore they'll take the bite strike themselves. So most bite wounds for dogs occur either on the nose, mouth, or paw. And on the other hand, you know, cats, well, they like to swat with their paw at a snake, so their bite's going to be on their paw if they get bitten there. Now, for the dogs, a head bite can be more serious because it often involves tissue with a high volume of blood vessels, and swelling is really significant. And some dog breeds will continue to attack the snake, taking several bites. Dogs are usually more active, and this will increase the circulation and spread of the venom. Dr. Fry says, "I've had friends lose big dogs to snake bites, dying in less than 10 minutes from the Eastern brown snake bite, which are not very large snakes. This highlights how devastatingly fast a lethal snake bite is to dogs." So here's some things to consider, really important. If you have a large breed type of dog, you have a better chance of saving your pet due to the body mass, okay? So the venom can travel through the small breeds much faster, and the venom can overwhelm their system unless there is on-site care. Now, most bites don't happen at the vet, so where are you going to get immediate care, right? They happen when you're really away from your home, you know, maybe even just walking your dog. Some exceptions are if your dwelling is near water or a pool of water, if you have a pool in ground, which can attract some types of snakes, such as your copperheads down here. They like the lake area especially. So if you're within a short drive, less than maybe 10 minutes of your vet, you can obtain the care you need. And especially try to know the type of snake that bit your pet, and then you have a chance of saving your pet, usually with the anti-venom treatment. So if you are not close to the care of a pet and you didn't see what bit your pet, I would say you better have a backup plan, okay? Let me tell you what happened. My experience. This was back in 2010. Melanie, you probably have heard it. My 90-pound, 6-year-old black lab was bitten by a poisonous snake while on a morning walk with me on a leash. We walked by an area in our neighborhood that hadn't been developed yet, and so there was some pretty tall grass. And while he was on this leash, which is only 4 feet long, my dog was sniffing the edge of this grass, and then he jumped straight up in the air. It's almost like he, you know, was jumping on a trampoline. It was very odd. And at first, I thought he stepped on a piece of glass, and it was stuck in his front paw. But he limped towards me, whining, and then the paw started to swell. So I lifted him as much as I could into the car, and I drove him to our vet, which was 10 minutes down the street. Now, once we got there, they looked at him immediately, and they examined the foot and his paw, and they found the fang puncture wounds on the top of the paw, and then they measured them. This is how they can tell if it's an adult snake that bit your pet or a small snake, a baby snake. Sometimes the baby snakes can have more dangerous venoms in them. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. It's like a baby copperhead can be just as lethal. So, but I didn't see what kind of snake bit him. I didn't hear any rattling. I didn't see a copperhead. I didn't see anything. I didn't even think it was a snake. So therefore, our anti-venom treatment option wasn't possible. So what I did is I wound up taking him home. I put a cone on his head so he wouldn't lick his paw. And it was bleeding pretty bad now because all the skin had fallen off. Okay, and the paw was really too sensitive to touch it, and I didn't want him licking it. So I had to work from the inside with the herbs, because all the vet said was you just got to make sure you don't get an infection, because if there's an infection, you might have to amputate. And the best case scenario they gave me was skin grafts, because none of that skin's going to grow back. None of that fur is going to grow back. And I heard that and I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought, wow, what is this going to cost me, you know, with all that? So the paw was really sensitive. Used herbs from the inside. What I did is I used herbs for inflammation. I used herbs to stop the bleeding. I used immune support herbs for infection fighting. I used blood cleansing herbs to sweep away the venom out of the system. And then I also used tissue building herbs to rebuild that paw. So the first 3 days were kind of odd and strange, and we had to keep him inactive because we didn't want more of that venom circulating until we could sweep it out of his system. But after 5 days, his energy did return, and he was able to walk. It's still a little difficult. His paw was tender. But within two weeks, his paw had rejuvenated, and it looked completely normal. It looked like he hadn't even been bitten. And I took him back to the vet to show them, okay? And they couldn't believe it either. They actually looked at the chart a couple times to see which paw was bitten, because they couldn't tell. They couldn't tell. And then they said, "What did you do?" Well, I told them what I did. I told them, just like I just told you. And I said, "And you know what? I can show you how to do that." You know? But they didn't want me to. They didn't want to do that, because they make more money on the other surgeries.
Sure they do.
Yeah. So, that was just, you know, I wasn't really surprised by their reaction when they declined, but it's really sad because, I mean, there's a lot of pets out there that don't need to suffer and die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have powerful alternatives is the point. And these are all, what I look at them as gifts from God, see. And so if you can't get to immediate care, you can have a backup plan. And so this whole experience, my dog taught me a lot in this whole experience. Now, my dog passed away last October. We miss him. 14 years. Great dog. But he taught me a lot. And from this experience, I put together the snake bite kit for pets. Okay? And you can use it on cats. You can use it on small dogs, big dogs, and it works on any venomous bite. Doesn't matter if it's a scorpion, snake, brown recluse, doesn't matter, okay? Now, obviously, there are some people that, you know, want to use the kit and then take them to the vet, which is fine. If you can use the anti-venom, that's fine, but be aware, anti-venom serums are not made here in the United States. They're typically made in France. They're flown over. They have a very short shelf life, and they're going to be pricey. Okay, they're going to be...
Plus, you have to know the snake.
And you have to know what snake bit you.
I wouldn't know.
And guess what? Here's the thing. This snake bite kit, we made one for humans. It works great for humans, too. So I had a neighbor up on the lake who got bit by a copperhead while mowing his yard. Okay? The thing was like well, it's on the lake area. And it was probably headed towards the water. Anyway, he's mowing his yard. He gets bit. He goes to the emergency room. He wasn't even admitted. They only kept him in observation 8 hours. Okay, gave him anti-venom because he told him what the snake was. He knew what it was. He was there in observation for a while, and then they went home. His bill was $80,000.
No.
Yep.
Come on.
No, it was in the newspaper. It was in the newspaper. So it's like those venom serums. Even if you get what is it when you get bit by rabies? When you get the rabies treatment, it's not quite as expensive, but you'd be in the $6,000 to $8,000 area for rabies shots. Yeah.
Wow.
So I mean, it's because they don't make the stuff here, you know, and they have to fly it over. But
they don't make anything here, and they have to fly everything over.
Well, that's probably true. Yeah. So anyway, so the point is you have some medicinal protections that you can implement and use and with confidence, really, because you know we've tested these things over the years and they've worked well for even vaccines. If you want to reverse vaccines, you can do that. So we have those kits. They're at thepowerherbs.com. They're in our product catalog. And we are in the smack dab in the middle of our Memorial Day sale, so you can save 25% on orders of $30 or more now through the 31st.
So what's all in that kit?
Well, you've got your blood cleanser. You've got your calcium formula that helps build collagen and tissue. You also have your immune support herbs that we use, like your echinaceas and astragalus roots. And we also have the anti-inflammatory willow bark and meadowsweet formulas and extra strength that we use to keep that inflammation down. So we have quite a few things that you use in combinations, and the instructions show you how to use it. And of course, if you can, for humans, you can use our topical poultice that draws the snake venom right back out. And that's exactly what the Native American Indians used, was these herbs that they powdered. And they would just use their saliva to make it into a paste and put it on the bite, and it just drew all these venomous compounds back out through the skin. But you just can mix it with water and put it on, and it just draws that venom back out. And the same principle, it'll draw a vaccine back out. It's too cool, actually.
How long does that last on the shelf?
The tincture's 10 years, and the dry powder's 5. 866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. See you later.
Thank you, Wendy.
Bye. Thanks.
Great information, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Let's get started right away. Again, we had a great day in gold. And, you know, now we're hearing about a cold war with China. There seems to be no sign that the tightening tensions between the United States and China are going to ease anytime soon. The U.S. House is poised to pass a Senate bill that would sanction Chinese officials for human rights abuses. And President Donald Trump has not yet said he would sign the bill, which was actually passed by the Senate earlier this month. The president is also trying to add to pressure on Beijing over the crackdown in Hong Kong, saying his administration will act very powerfully. China said it would retaliate if there was any interference in its internal affairs. European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde gave a gloomy outlook for the region's economy this morning, predicting output that would likely shrink 8% to 12%. This year, adding that estimates for a mild slowdown are out of date, Dave. Is your mic on, Dave? Are you there talking and you don't have your mic on? I think I lost Dave. He's going to have to get called back. Here I'm giving him heck for not paying any attention. And he wasn't even there. So, this morning, the European Commission seems to have made a major step forward in fighting the downturn by proposing 500 billion euros in grants to states that were hardest hit by the outbreak and a further 250 billion euros in loans. You know, and again, all the reasons why the markets were stronger, the proposal will likely kick off weeks of bargaining between member states until a compromise can be agreed to. And speaking of recovery spending, hey, Japan is set to unveil a new stimulus package worth more than $1 trillion and its second such measure in a month. And we just know Japan has been going crazy in the past few years, just pumping money into the system to keep the stimulus, keep pumping in the stimulus to keep the economy going. And on the home front, as Congress mulls possible new relief funding for state and local governments, New York City is seeking authority to borrow as much as $7 billion to make up the revenue loss due to the pandemic. Today, we had the Fed periodic beige book summary of the economy. And the Fed said that the mass unemployment that has been accompanied by the pandemic has been compounded by people who don't want to return to work. We talk about this, you know, just I think yesterday with Butch. With the headline unemployment rate through April at a post-World War II record 14.7%, it's probably well over 20, but hey, we can give governments you know, their 14.7 and 20.5 million layoffs during the month. Workers are reluctant to head back to their jobs for a number of reasons. The Beige Book also cited a generally downbeat outlook from business contacts regarding hopes for the recovery. The report said business leaders cited challenges in bringing employees back to work, including workers' health concerns, limited access to child care, and generous unemployment insurance benefits. And of course, we have nearly 40 million people that have submitted unemployment claims since everything was shut down in mid-March. More than 25 million have been receiving benefits for at least 2 weeks, And the federal government has responded with aggressive benefit programs that pay many workers their regular benefits plus their $600. Pretty nice wages. And I hear Dave is back.
Yes, ma'am. My apologies, ladies and gentlemen. Some weather issues that apparently are crimping on local internet. Sorry about that.
Well, I'm glad you weren't on because I was saying, Dave, and I start, where is he? Turn on your mic, and then I saw you were gone. So,
yes.
welcome back. And I was just talking about the beige book, the Fed's beige book. And,
yeah.
Workers are a little reluctant to return to jobs.
Yeah, an interesting development there. The Fed report noted that the payroll protection program helped many businesses to limit or avoid layoffs, although employment did continue to fall sharply in retail and leisure, not to mention the hospitality sectors. And banks have been seeing strong continuing demand for the loans. Now, broadly speaking, the Beige Book said the economy declined across all 12 Fed districts, falling sharply in most of them amid plunges in activity for the sectors I just mentioned. While auto sales were substantially lower than last year, some areas did report improvement since the last report on April 15th. Notably, there's also a lack of optimism about the future, sort of the opposite of what we seen with that anomalous consumer sentiment report about early May. But the Beige Book said that although many contacts expressed hope that overall activity would pick up as businesses reopened, the outlook remained highly uncertain. And most contacts, the Fed said, were pessimistic about the potential pace of recovery. Now, the agriculture and energy industries also reported strong declines, as, of course, energy prices did plummet for a good part of the quarter, and production at meatpacking facilities was slowed or shut down at some of the biggest processing plants. Of course, real estate took a big hit as commercial real estate owners noted a large number of tenants who missed or deferred payments. We'll talk a little bit more about the real estate market in a few minutes, Melody.
Well, you know, everybody knows CNBC's Jim Cramer. I'm not a fan, but he finally agrees with us, Dave.
Hey.
How about that?
Took you long enough, Jimmy.
I hear you.
My Philadelphia boy.
But he said this morning that he thought some stocks were rallying too far too quickly, you know, given the high level of the unemployment. He says it's too happy days are here again. It's just not going to work like that. Not when you have 38, 40 million people unemployed. Stocks that would benefit from a faster economic recovery, they jumped. This morning, of course, we, you know, had two great days in the stock market. Some of the bigger gains that were all in the news today were the airlines and cruise lines, American Airlines, Carnival. They both surged 8% early. But then by late morning, the Dow had given up about half of those gains. So, you know, the mad money Jim Cramer pointed to travel stocks and a recent run-up for tech giant Facebook as moves he thought were disconnected from the fundamentals of the economy and the businesses. He says you just can't keep building on a castle of sand. He says he sees a lot of quicksand underneath some moves, and he just wishes it would just calm down a little and allow everything to digest. And again, we can talk about, you know, the great recovery. We can talk about people going back to work and, you know, people, you know, I don't think people are going to get back to doing what they did prior to March. And I think that's going to take a while. But these states are reopening very slowly. And there's just no way. You might have the stock market have that V shape a little bit, but not the economy. But Wall Street and D.C. likes to think that Wall Street is the same as the economy. And they have buffaloed many people into thinking that it is. But so anyway, it's good. The market has rallied from its low point in late March. It's also nice to see, now that the market has rallied from its low point in late March, that gold is still going strong and remaining at these levels. As everybody knows, you can't pump out this kind of money and not have some sort of impact somewhere along the lines, Dave. So
yeah, indeed.
Yeah. So I mean, we've seen the market rally from its low point in late March. The tech-heavy NASDAQ has turned positive for the year, while the S&P 500 has lost more than 6%, and the Dow is down more than 11%. Gold is up 13%. So not a bad move for gold. And we also have moving supply chains closer to home. If you listen to the politicians, you'll hear the benefits of moving supply chains closer to home to avoid labor shocks, like the lockdown of the entire population during a pandemic. Listen to economists, though, and they'll lay out all the costs. According to a new research by economists from the University of Michigan, Yale, and the University of Texas at Austin, the average contraction in GDP tied to the pandemic is expected to be about 32%, with about a third of it attributed to kinks in global supply chains. But in a world without trade and components and final products, the average GDP drop would have been 32%. Is that right, Dave? Yeah.
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 Yeah, I mean it's showing the point of this study.
The renationalization of global supply chains does not in general make countries more resilient to a pandemic-induced contractions in labor supply. This is because eliminating reliance on foreign inputs increases reliance on domestic inputs, which are also subject to the lockdowns, as the study says. So whether renationalizing supply chains insulates a country from a pandemic depends on whether it plans to impose a more or less stringent lockdown than its trading partners, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, for example, in the UK, you got Prime Minister Boris Johnson. His government has been being criticized for inadequate access to PPE and virus tests. They're still looking at how to reinforce supply chains to ensure that essential goods keep flowing. France's President Emmanuel Macron announced measures yesterday to support the domestic auto industry there. Plan expected to include ways to reshore manufacturing of cars and to develop electric and hydrogen powered cars domestically. Whoa, back to the future. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing said it plans to spend $12 billion building a chip plant right here in Arizona. Japanese Finance Minister Taro Aso said yesterday that his country needs to increase the safety of supply chains, even if it's more expensive, and the economy needs to be ready for a second wave of the virus. Some countries see this shift as an opportunity. India, their government, Narendra Modi, is developing an area of land nearly double the size of Luxembourg to lure businesses moving out of China. And the Philippines also sees decoupling from China as a chance to court foreign investment. That's according to its central bank governor. Different strokes for different folks.
And you know what I find interesting, though, Dave, is when you had the Japanese finance minister say that, you know, they need to do more to increase the safety of supply chain, even if it's more expensive. So they're not the ones that have to pay for it. So, you know, they don't care. Governments don't care if it costs more. You know, look at the tax cuts, the stimulus that they'll give these corporations to lure them right to their countries. And who gets to pay for it all?
Ah, the good old consumer.
Yeah.
The taxpayer.
The consumer, the taxpayer. So how much more they can take? And, you know, if they do that, how much more can he buy? So, I don't know. But there was a, I think this was a study from the Commerce Department, and it seems like Americans are behaving a little bit differently than in previous recessions. And everyone is thinking that what created the recession is soon going to pass. Many continue to spend money as if nothing has changed. UPS has come out and said it's three times busier than Christmas time. Three times. United States Post Office, it's far busier than it is at Christmas time. So people are out there spending. The latest example is the Commerce Department's new home sales report, which showed home sales increased in April. Go figure. Despite the nationwide lockdowns that banned real estate agents in some states from even showing. How's that all work? These are fuzzy math or what? I don't know. Sales of newly built homes rose by 1% in April compared with March, dramatically outpacing economists' expectations for a 22% decline. Mortgage applications to purchase, I mean, they couldn't even build homes for the past 3 or 4 months. So, you know, I don't know what equals sales of newly built homes. You know, do they count the mortgages or do they count? Well, if you look at mortgage applications to purchase a home, that rose 9% last week from the previous week and from a year earlier. You know, that was according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. You know, Dave, some of these numbers just don't all fit together.
Well, a lot of them are, some of them are conflicting.
Right.
And the rest of them are seemingly counterintuitive.
Yeah.
What we're going through. But I think the trend in housing suggests that there's all this pent-up demand that people had been putting off because of stay-at-home orders. I mean, that's what a lot of these industry observers are saying.
Yeah, but on building, I mean, there's a lot of areas where they didn't build here. They were all shut down. They were able to do some things, but not to the degree before everything was shut down. So, I mean, that's what I find. And so I can't imagine at all. But there is a lot of the country that was left open that I guess still supplied.
Yeah, and that's where this 1% is coming from.
And where we're coming from, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188 for immediate delivery. We do have beautiful peace dollars. They're AU condition, almost uncirculated, and they're just beautiful. And, you know, it's funny, there's really less. Everybody likes the Morgan Silver Dollar. Everybody thinks that the Morgan Silver, and I mean, there are some Morgan Silver Dollars that, you know, are a little more rare than the Peace Dollar. But the Peace Dollars in your common grades, you know, the common year, there's really not that many of them. And the way they did the design, they didn't hold up very well. And they're actually very beautiful in the AU condition. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We can get that right out to you. We have 90% silver ready to go. And, you know, again, folks, silver is, there's no, you know, the only coin in the world is not an American silver eagle. They're nice to have. They're beautiful. They're beautiful to have. But they're not worth the weight, and they're not worth the premium that you pay. I mean, good grief. If you quit buying, if they are available anywhere else, and paying high prices, $200 for them, premiums will come down. Premiums will come down. So you can be in control of that. That's up to you. But give us a call at 800-375-4188. You know, again, we take someone from mainstream media and Wall Street, the investment world, but you have to look at what they write, and you have to look at where they're leading their investors. Ray Dalio, in a recent article, he suggested that the rise of the Chinese economy and its economic capabilities is going to threaten to unseat the U.S. as the world's number one superpower. Well, we all knew that's where that was. I mean, of course, that's China's goal. But he writes, as people increasingly bet on prosperity continuing, they increasingly borrow money to do that. And it all leads to a bubble. As prosperity increases, the wealth gap grows. Sound familiar, ladies and gentlemen? He continues, eventually, the debt bubble bursts, which leads to the printing of money and credit and increased internal conflict, which leads to some sort of wealth redistribution revolution that can be peaceful or violent. Take a look at our world today. Which do you choose? Which do you think we're going to face? Personally, I don't believe it's going to be peaceful. There's too much anger and hate in this world today. Out of these debt, economic, domestic, and world order breakdowns that take the forms of revolutions and wars comes new winners and losers. Then the winners get together to create a new domestic and world orders. Dave.
Yeah, interesting perspective. FX Empire's Christopher Mullen said that what Dalio seems to miss is the choice we have in how we address the rise of China and how we protect our freedoms, rights, and our future from any threats that China may present. I mean, currently the world is moving away from a China-friendly relationship. China's rise over the past three decades has mostly been on the success of selling China as a cheap manufacturing center for the U.S. and other strong economies. The process of growing China has been to take advantage of the relationships they've built with foreign business, particularly the banking industry. Now, this is all starting to come to a sudden halt, which may put extreme pressures on China's banking and credit systems over the next two decades or more. Vermeulen also counters that Dalio's comments don't necessarily translate into real-world processes. Vermeulen says, the world appears to be much more aligned toward restoring some proper order and developing a real future where nations are held accountable and central banks may be forced to adopt a more conservative capital process in the near future. Well, all right, I don't know you, Chris. I don't believe I've ever read you before, but if the Federal Reserve is any indication, whew, I think we've got a long way to go until the world is as you vision. We shall see, Melody.
Methinks he lives in Colorado.
Oh, Rocky Mountain High?
Yes. Now, not everybody. I have a lot of listeners in Colorado, so don't get upset with me. But
natural. I'm talking about the natural high.
Oh, then yes, the natural.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, you know, today we were going to talk about SpaceX, the launch, but Dave, tell the listeners about briefly why we're going to postpone that.
Well, it was scheduled for 4:33 p.m. Eastern Time. Blast off. NASA astronauts Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley were preparing for that Launch America, as it's being called, the U.S.'s first manned space mission in nearly a decade. Alas, gray clouds above, choppy waves in the Atlantic, and apparently a number of lightning bolts within the 10-mile radius. That's the area of go and no-go for rocket launches. NASA called off the launch. Now, the good news is, particularly if you're, you know, not necessarily a space junkie, but fascinated by this area of life, and this is really is going to be, I believe, the first manned private-public partnership involving the U.S. The next opportunities to launch are Saturday at 3:22 p.m. Eastern Time, and if that doesn't go off, Sunday at 3 p.m. So we'll see what happens. Let's say a prayer for Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley as they re-prepare, they reunite with their families and get ready for another departure to the International Space Station, hopefully this weekend, Melody.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, really up until this morning, before it was all, it's a go, it's a go, it's a go, and my little weatherman here on the Eastern Shore, when he was doing the weather report at 11 o'clock last night, he says, there's no way that's going to be launched. And so,
yeah, throughout the day, I was following this pretty closely, even up until an hour beforehand when they gave it a go. It was still being reported as a 50-50 possibility at the launch time. So, Mother Nature, she be the boss.
Yeah, and I'm just not, you know, I mean, I, you know, I really don't know, you know, when you have government and private industry do something like this. I can't get too excited about it, but it really was fascinating to see the astronauts and their outfits, spacesuits, their outfits.
Because
they were all redesigned, and I mean, you go back and
svelte.
Yes, very much so, very much so, and very attractive. And it was real interesting. Anyway, you all can stand tuned for that on Saturday. The number of central banks buying gold, well, you know what? That is all expected to increase substantially this year. According to the 2020 Central Bank Gold Reserve Survey, 20% of central banks, they're intending to increase their gold reserves over the next 12 months compared to just 8% of the respondents in 2019. The increase is particularly notable as central bank buying has reached record levels in recent years, adding around 650 tons in 2019 alone. Several of the survey's key findings may explain the significant growth in planned gold purchases by central banks. Notably, 88% of respondents say that negative interest rates are a relative factor for their reserve management decisions. The continuation of expansionary monetary policies due to the COVID-19 pandemic, which coincided with the fieldwork of this survey, will likely keep interest rates near zero for a foreseeable future, Dave.
Yeah, and further, 79% of respondents view gold's performance during times of crisis as an important reason to hold gold. That's up from just about 60% last year. And three-quarters of respondents consider gold's lack of default risk to be an important reason for holding the metal. Well, that's up from, again, 60% in 2019. Now, these shifts may suggest a reevaluation of gold's role amidst ongoing financial and economic uncertainty, while also reflecting long-term concerns about fiscal sustainability as government stimulus continues to be deployed to cushion economies around the world. Now, recent years have also seen an increase in the number and diversity of central bank gold buyers. In 2010, for example, only 8 central banks were net buyers of gold. By last year, that number had almost tripled to 22, representing 12% of all central banks globally. And frankly, I thought the figure would be a little higher than that. The 2020 survey points to a continuation of this trend. Interesting stuff there, Melody. Says to me that if central banks are a baseline for what Joe and Sally gold buyers should be thinking about doing, well, I think that kind of speaks for itself, don't you?
I do. And we're going to talk about Hong Kong's financial hub status is at risk. And I'm going to bring it back to those who store metals outside the country. This is just one example. And there's tons of others. The risk. And, I hear all the positives. And you know what? If someone has $20, $30, $40, $50 million, and they want, they have enough to spread the risk. But that's usually not the case. Usually, the people that store, that get, or take advantage of, are people with hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe a million. They can't afford to lose it. They don't look to what's suitable for people. And they use the fear that government is going to take it and government is going to do this and it's best stored. When you have, as Beijing is forcing a sweeping national security law on Hong Kong, the once semi-autonomous city status as one of Asia's largest financial hubs, it is at risk. Political freedoms and strong rule of law help to make Hong Kong a thriving center for international banking and finance. But China's leaders may be betting the top firms in Hong Kong will trade some political freedoms for the economic prosperity that Beijing can offer. As we reported last week, the National People's Congress, China's rubber-stamped legislature, unveiled a new security law that will criminalize sedition, foreign influence, and secession in Hong Kong. The NPC bypassed Hong Kong's own chief executive and legislature to impose the law, and it's not yet clear just how the law will be implemented, but mainland China has used its own security laws to crush dissent and dismantle independent civil society. So it's hard to see how Hong Kong could remain the Asian financial center that it's become if China takes over, and this is coming from our own White House National Security Advisor. The new national security law is already creating uncertainty and can undermine the pillars of Hong Kong's status. I mean,
Melody, excellent perspective, particularly tying foreign storage of of gold. Certainly an unintended consequence, but a very real possibility, depending how drastic China's move on Hong Kong evolves, how it becomes over the next few years. You know, the law that Melody talked about will affect whether companies decide to expand their Hong Kong operations, not to open up a new office there at all, or even make plans to relocate existing business to another Asian city. Or firms could potentially adjust to political uncertainty. That's so says Kyle Sullivan of a D.C.-based business intelligence firm. He added, there's no doubt that they've been doing that over the last year. Now, another example, international businesses prefer to conduct arbitration in Hong Kong rather than mainland China because the city has an independent legal system and a strong tradition of transparency. And if firms begin to see evidence that China's new heavy security presence in Hong Kong is interfering with fair arbitration, all bets are off, taking their business elsewhere.
I'll tell you, that's a story that no one is talking about. That's all the time we have for today's program. Thanks again, Alan, for co-hosting, and I'll be back tomorrow with Pastor Butch Paul. Dave, you'll be back on Friday. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. Thanks for listening. Be safe, and God bless. If I got me a well-being man.